From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you so much, Carl Castle. Thank you all. We have got a terrific show for you today. Comedian Jimmy Fallon will be our guest later on to play Not My Job. Yeah, we're pretty excited. Now, apparently, Mr. Fallon is one of a number of gentlemen who hosts a show in the evening in which jokes and amusing observations are made about the week's news. And we were excited to find out that other people are following our lead in this, imitation being a fine form of flattery. And we asked, well, you know, what is their prize for when their viewers answer questions correctly? And we were amazed to discover that Mr. Fallon and his colleagues offer no prizes at all. I wish them well, but honestly, jokes without prizes. This can't last. You know, we're looking out for you, though. If you want Carl's voice on your home answering machine, give us a call, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Amber from Arlington, Virginia.
Hey, Amber, how are things in Arlington?
I'm an attorney.
Oh, that's how things are.
Yeah.
I understand. Are you one of those many, many, many thousands of attorneys who work in and around the federal government?
Indeed.
Indeed. What do you do for the giant beast?
Well, I do document review, which means I read people's emails.
Really?
Ah.
Yeah.
Anybody's you like?
Well, we definitely get some surprising ones mixed
in
sometimes.
Bet. Can you tell us about them? We got time.
Oh. I'm sure that would be a confidentiality breach.
Oh, we can't have one of those in Washington.
No.
No, never.
Well, welcome to the show, Amber. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a writer for the Boston Globe magazine and the author of the new book, Idiot America, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hello, Amber.
Hi.
Next is one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, the fabulous Ms. Roxanne Roberts is right here.
Hello, Amber.
Hi, Roxanne.
And lastly, a humorist and author whose latest book is Alphabet Juice, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Hi, Amber.
Hi.
Amber, you're going to play Who's Carl this time. Of course, Carl Castle will start us off with three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that. You will, of course, win a prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
I hope so.
Here is your first quote.
You have lots of splaining to do.
That was Senator Tom Coburn tastefully and appropriately quoting Ricky Ricardo as he questioned somebody this week who?
Sotomayor.
Yeah, Sonia Sotomayor. Senator Coburn was, of course, asking Judge Sotomayor about her ruling in the case of Lucy versus Copacabana nightclub, where Sotomayor had ruled there was an inherent right to play congas at a nightclub, but only while wearing a fake mustache. During the hearings, during which Democrats asked Sotomayor if she was amazing or just wonderful, Republicans did their best to protest the continuing oppression of old white men by wise Latina women, including Sotomayor, Sotomayor's mom, Maria from Sesame Street, and the much feared Dora the Explorer. Following Coburn's lead, other Republicans used apropos Latino idioms so as to connect with the nominee, such as when Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama referred to her as the Juan Valdez of judicial activism. When Senator Cornyn of Texas yelled, "President, we don't need no stinking presidents."
And to be fair, that was only the second most embarrassing thing Senator Coburn did this week. Mm. The first one was saying that, telling him that, yes, he had advised Senator Ensign to pay off his mistress, but that he wasn't going to give us any details because he was acting in his capacity as a confessor.
Right. Yeah. Or it happened as a doctor, and since he's an obstetrician.
Yeah. Obstetrician, yeah.
Yeah, that might have been
I thought it was the other way around, since Ensign is a veterinarian, that it was doctor privilege for him.
Here is your second quote.
The federal government competes with the private sector the way an alligator competes with a duck. It consumes it.
That was Indiana Congressman Mike Pence getting all zoological
as he criticized a government initiative to compete with the private sector on what major issue?
Healthcare.
Yes, indeed. Healthcare. Very good. This is the week we've all been waiting for. The rollout of healthcare reform legislation, the 1,000-page bill, is incredibly complicated. For example, under the plan, if you say need your tonsils out, it'll be subsidized by the government, but it will be done by Lockheed Martin using Dremel tools left over from the stealth bomber project. For efficiency's sake. President Obama appeared at an event at the White House to roll out the legislation. He was surrounded there by nurses. He did this thing after talking to some of them privately in the Oval Office. He admitted that he, quote, has a bias toward nurses, and he talked about how intimately nurses know the issues. One more reason why Obama can do this and Bill Clinton couldn't. Conservatives, of course, Republicans, were decrying the plan. They say that if this passes, our current health care system will be destroyed. Of course, our current health care system for most people is watching Grey's Anatomy while applying head-on to their tumor.
Wait a minute, that doesn't work?
No, it doesn't.
What is head-on?
Head-on is that, you don't know? Because you don't watch enough TV. Head-on, apply directly to the forehead. Head-on, apply directly to the forehead. It's this homeopathic nonsense that people have been buying by the millions
in
the hope that it will help
oil,
them.
It's snake oil, but in kind of a gel form.
Yes.
Well, what if they were able to contribute to our show, though? Wouldn't we give it another thought?
I mean, if they were to sponsor us?
Yeah.
Head-on?
I'd rub it on anything.
Yeah, exactly.
We'd say nice things about cholera if they sponsored the show.
I mean. All right, Amber, your last quote is from a recent article about a big movie opening this week.
Is that a wand in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?
That was from a somewhat snarky piece in Esquire and the new, more mature installment of a movie franchise out this week. What is it?
Harry Potter.
Yes, everybody is all excited about the sixth Harry Potter movie, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood. Oh, my God, is that a girl walking by? The movie begins, this is true, with a cute waitress offering Harry his, shall we say, admission letter to a magical school of a different kind. But he's rudely interrupted by some annoying old guy with a pointy hat and clearly misplaced priorities. In this one, Harry is both fighting off the forces of evil and his own hormones. The result is a cross between the Lord of the Rings and Gossip Girl. The Hogwarts kids do have some advantages in dealing with the trials of adolescence. They can clear up acne with a simple clear Silima spell. Mm-hmm. And the Weasley twins, as you know, if you follow the books, they're now in the joke shop. They're, in addition to providing extendable ears, they're providing some magical object called fake IDs to the kids at Hogwarts. So it's all pretty exciting, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Is this the end of Harry?
No, there will be two more movies.
Oh.
There was going to be one more movie, but they decided they'd make it two so as to make more money. Oh, I'm sorry, did I say that? No, because...
Well, what's-his-name will be 32 by then.
Exactly. That'll kind of be a problem, I think. Yeah. It's like, Harry, what evil wizard spell has called you to start losing your hair, they'll say. As we get to the end of the second movie.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Amber do?
Amber was perfect, Peter. Three correct answers. Amber, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done, Amber. Congratulations. Thanks for playing. Bye-bye.
Each night I ask the stars up above, why must I be a teenager in love?
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Charlie, the advanced F-22 fighter jet, among the most expensive planes ever created, is causing some controversy. Some say it's an important addition to our arsenal. It's worth the $65 billion it's already cost. Critics say it's too flawed and should be cut off. Among other things, the super fighter is vulnerable to what?
Spitballs.
Close.
Slingshots.
Even more amazing.
BB guns.
Maybe it can have a supersonic umbrella of some kind.
Rain?
Yes, rain. On the one hand, the F-22, incredibly advanced fighter jet, does aerobatic tricks that make the spaceships in Battlestar Galactica look like biplanes. On the other hand, you cannot fly them when it rains. Rain to quote the Washington Post, rain and other abrasives, unquote,
ooh,
damage the plane's very delicate skin. Apparently, it's made of an alloy of titanium and cotton candy. But that's fine, the Pentagon says. That's totally fine. Secret intelligence studies have shown that on rainy days, our nation's enemies are often too depressed to attack us anyway. The axis of evil on rainy days, they just sit around and journal, you know.
I had this awful vision of this pilot flying through a rainstorm and discovering that all of a sudden that there's no airplane anymore.
Well, I bet we have some sort of blower planes that can fly over the jets.
That'll be another $85 billion.
Keep them dry.
Blow all of the rain away, and then they can just... our military know what they're doing. I mean, you... Or a towel.
Nick, for example.
A big towel ship right behind it.
No, a ShamWow.
A ShamWow.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
By George, he's got it. By George, he's got it. Now, once again, where does it rain?
On the plain, on the plain.
And where's that soggy...
Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff, the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait.
Hello, my name is Flo Stahl from Avon, Connecticut.
Hey, Flo, how are you?
Pretty good, thank you.
That's a great old-fashioned name. Is it short for anything? Short for Florence?
Yep, that's what it's short for.
I know, and do people just assume you're friendly and folksy and stuff like that?
Well, I hope so.
And is that annoying because you're really crabby and mean?
Well, I was, but after listening to you, I'm feeling very healthy and good-natured.
You have that effect. Well done. Flo, welcome to the show. Your job, of course, tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Flo's topic?
This is not a test. Oh, wait. Actually, it is.
We've read all about doping scandals in the Tour de France, Major League Baseball. Turns out athletes are not the only ones being monitored by their bosses. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about groups facing rigorous testing in the job. Choose that true story. You will win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Yeah, I am. Okay.
All right. Let's hear from Charlie Pierce first off.
The managers of the Tiefenthaler sausage plant in Walworth, Wisconsin, were being plagued by pilfering. So in an attempt to run the sausage thieves to ground, the bosses began including a substance in the sausage that, upon contact with the skin, will turn the skin a bright green. Workers at the plant were then required to present their hands for inspection upon entering and leaving every day. We were at our wits' end, said Frank Dybeck, the plant's director of security. This was our last resort. The company hastened to assure its customers that the anti-theft substance had a short shelf life and was fully deactivated by cooking the sausage. Nobody's going to get green at the gills if they eat our product, said Dybeck, unless they eat too much of it.
A sausage company in Wisconsin trying to catch thieves green-handed. Your next story of employees under scrutiny comes from Roxanne Roberts.
Hey, you, smile. And not some beauty queen fake smile, but a real you light up my life smile. More than 500 employees at Japan's Kihin Electric Express Railway are now subjected to daily face scans by their smile police. The software, developed by Japanese company Omron, analyzes smiles based on lip curves, eye movements, and wrinkles, and then rates them on a scale of 0 to 100. A below-par grin receives a smile-boosting instant message on the computer, quote, you still look too serious, or, quote, lift up your mouth corners, according to the Mainichi Daily News. If that wasn't enough, workers receive a daily printout of their smiles, which they are expected to carry with them throughout the day to inspire them. Mm-hmm. The program doesn't have a motto yet, so I nominate Grin and Bear It or Else.
Smile monitoring done electronically for railway employees in Japan. Your last story of bosses carefully monitoring the staff comes from Roy Blunt, Jr.
At the Alfred G. Leach Reptile Research Center in Sarasota, Florida, employees are screened every day now because, as the center's director put it this week, nobody likes to see a fuzzy pink snake. Pilopecia rosacea is a rare fungus that has no visible effect on human skin but manifests itself on many reptiles as a fine layer of rose-colored fuzz. That is how it was showing up on the center's snakes, frogs, and lizards. At first, laughs one researcher, I thought I had the DTs. turned out that several of her colleagues were carriers of the condition, so now everyone has to be gone over with a special fungus-sensitive light before entering the premises. It makes us all feel like Snake Fuzz Mary, said the director. But that's nothing compared to how the animals felt. The frogs wouldn't touch each other.
All right, then. Flo, here's the deal. One of these stories is true. Is it from Charlie Pierce, the story of how a sausage factory is trying to dye the thieves' hands green with specially doctored sausages? From Roxanne Roberts, the story of how employees at a Japanese railway are tested for smiles every day by a smile scanner to make sure they're cheerful enough. Or from Roy Blunt Jr., how the employees of a reptile museum are being checked for fungus that will turn the reptiles pink. Which of these is the real story?
They all sound equally crazy. And, you know, my first inclination is to go with the Japan smile, but that's almost too obvious. I think I'm going to go with the reptile and the fuzzy pink.
You're going to go for the fuzzy pink reptile?
I am.
All right. That's your choice. Roy's story. Well, we actually spoke to someone who had something to do with this testing program.
Technology can actually detect the edge of your lips. And when you smile, the edge becomes longer and the points get wider.
I'm sorry, that was Reno Sufi. He's the director of marketing at Omran, the company behind the smile scanners used at the Japanese railway. I'm so sorry, but clearly both obvious and true. Roxanne's story was the true one. You did not win, but you earned a point for Roy because of his terrifying story of pink fuzzy reptile.
I'm sorry, Flo. I hope you're still feeling folksy in the lady.
I am. It's been
good.
Fun.
Well,
good.
Thank you, Flo. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Those guys are gonna clear up, put on a happy face. Brush off the clouds and cheer up, put on a happy face.
And now the game where we ask people who have done a lot about something they never noticed because, frankly, they were too busy. About 30 years ago, an obscure comedian named David Letterman was given a time slot after The Tonight Show became a huge star. Then that time slot was given to an unknown comedy writer named Conan O'Brien. He's a huge star. Now hosting a show in that time slot, former Saturday Night Live star Jimmy Fallon. Will he follow his predecessors to talk show stardom? Well, probably not, because unlike them, he agreed to come on this show. Jimmy Fallon, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Well, I'm so happy. Thank you.
Key career error.
Peter, thank you so much. Carl, thank you, everybody. Thanks for having me.
We're excited.
It's not over yet.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I thought I was going to say goodbye to everybody.
No.
Well, just in case I don't get around to it, it was great.
Yeah, thank you.
You won, too, by the way.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited. Thanks, yeah. Carl.
Well, I want to talk to you about the experience of creating a talk show, but first, a little biography. From what we were able to tell, you have always wanted to be a comedian on TV. That's what you told people in high school.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's weird. My mom, of course, told me, it's always your mother that remembers these things. She said, do you remember your eighth grade yearbook? They made a prophecy and said James Fallon will most likely replace David Letterman.
Wow.
And it was weird. Yeah, well, my principal was Nostradamus. So, I mean, that's something to do with it. Yeah, I guess maybe it planted a seed in my head back then, but I don't remember, I never really thought, like, oh, well, that would happen to me, but...
Well, what was David Letterman doing at that time? Maybe he was still...
He's a weatherman in Indianapolis.
He was a weatherman in Indianapolis.
And someday, my friend, you will achieve that dream. You need to move to Indianapolis.
There's a line of thunderstorms moving through Terre Haute.
But you, I'm told that you were like, you were telling people, I'm going to be on Saturday Night Live. And by a ridiculously young age, you were on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I mean, I used to tape the show and watch it every Saturday at my house. My parents would let me, drink underage if I didn't leave the house.
Right.
So my parents would buy me a six-pack of beer. I'd sit by myself with a bag of chips, and I'd watch Saturday Night Live. And I know I'm such a nerd. And I would tape, but I thought it was cool. But, I'm almost like a human TiVo. I would tape it, and just the funny sketches, I would save that, and I would bring them to parties. I'd physically come in with a videotape and be like, you got to watch this. And I'd put in some, funny Mike Myers, Dana Carvey thing or something.
That's great. So when you showed up at Saturday Night Live, did you tell them all this?
Yeah, I mean, I was a little embarrassed at first. I mean, I was just, like, referencing everything and just freaking out when people were doing characters. And I really wasn't cool at all. I was
a
little
annoyed. Did you show them some of your old tapes?
Yeah. I still have all my old tapes. I have every show on tape since 86.
Wow. Well, let's talk about this. So I'm not quite sure how it happened. Lorne Michaels and NBC said, yes, you were the guy. You were going to be replacing. I guess you were replacing Conan. Conan went to The Tonight Show. You went to Late Night.
Yeah. When I was leaving Saturday Night Live, I, you know, my contract was up. And I said, Lorne, I'm going to go. And he's like, well, what do you want to do? And I go, I probably want to, you know, do movies, I guess. I don't know what I was going to do. And he's like, well, Conan signed a contract. He's leaving. He's going to host The Tonight Show in 5 years. So in 5 years, I think he'd be a great replacement. And I think Tina Fey was in the room at the time. She was like, yeah, I think he'd be good. I go, oh, maybe, I don't know. And then I tried movies, and that didn't work out too well. So so 5 years later, Lorne, I called him up and said, hey, is that offer still stand, or what's up? But and he was like, yeah, absolutely, you're my first choice. And so I just immediately stopped watching all the guys that were on currently, because if I did watch Letterman or you know, I would end up imitating them. So I had to just stop and just start from scratch and just try to figure out my own way to go. And so I'm still figuring out, but we're 4 months in and we're still on the air.
Well, you do some odd things. There's a thing I saw this week. Audience make under, you take people out of the audience and you make them uglier than they were.
Yeah.
Have you yet to come up with something that's actually too bizarre for your producers? Are they letting you do anything you want?
No one's watching.
No, well, that's
fantastic. We're allowed to do it. We've done stuff that just flopped and just sat there. We had this one I thought would be big, but it didn't work. But it was an alien who was going to take over. He was going to take over the Earth.
Yeah.
But as he's about to take over the Earth, he's like interrupted all the monitors. You know, the channel NBC. And as he's doing this, his wife is yelling at him behind the camera. He's like, who are you talking to? He's like, will you shut up? I'm trying to take over the Earth. He's like, oh, my. You know, and they get in a huge domestic fight. And he never gets to, it just embarrasses himself. It didn't work at all. It really tanked. I mean, it was crickets. And we're nowhere near crickets in our studio.
Can I ask a question?
I have a question.
I now see you in suits like every single night. Did you have to like get a whole bunch of new suits or something?
I totally did. Yeah.
Because you look like a grown up all of a sudden.
I'm going to take that as a compliment. Yeah. Thank you.
Did they say, okay, Jimmy, you got to wear a lot of suits now? And did they give you like shirts with matching ties and things? And something you up like that?
No. They kind of said that, you know, you can do whatever you want. I was thinking like, I could wear whatever. I could come out with a T-shirt or whatever, but I think as a host, I don't know what you guys are wearing now, but I would wear a...
Virtually nothing.
Weird. It's weird, but it is hot out.
It is.
But,
and it's radio.
I'd like to, you know, I remember actually being a guest on David Letterman. It's my first time I was a guest, and I went on, and I got some hip stylist style me, and they gave me this, I'm not kidding, like a $300 T-shirt. Oh. A T-shirt, but it was $300, and I got a $300 T-shirt and like $200 pair of jeans.
Is a $300 T-shirt like a $20 T-shirt with $280 stapled to it?
Yes, but you can't see where the $280
are. All right, got it.
And so I go on the show, and I'm so honored. I'm shaking. I mean, I love David Letterman, and I go on. He goes, hey, thanks for dressing up.
Oh, man.
I'll never forget that. And ever since then, I always wore a suit on a talk show because I almost wanted to explain to the audience, like, hey, this is like $600 worth of clothes.
This is the most expensive
dirtbag you've ever met in your life.
I got to ask you about this. When you were on Saturday Night Live, and I want to ask you if it's fair, but you had the reputation for cracking up in skits. Is that true?
Yeah, I definitely did. I mean, let me just first say out there that I'm not a good actor. So, I mean, if something's funny, I'm...
No, that's not true. We saw Taxi. We thought...
No, that was not a drama.
No. Oh.
No, it was a comedy.
Oh. Does the fact that I wept mean that there's something wrong with me?
I don't know what to tell you, but when I'm working with, like, Will Ferrell and you know, Horatio Sanz, they would just... Will would change things up on air to make me laugh because it was live show.
Right.
So, like, we do, the cowbell sketch, for instance, where he's playing a guy who's banging a cowbell to a Blue Oyster Cult song, and he's just hitting the cowbell way too hard so you can't even hear the band. That's the joke.
Yeah. Right.
But on air, he wore this really short shirt.
Yeah.
And every time he would lift the cowbell, his gut would fall out. I was laughing so hard and trying not to laugh. Like, I couldn't turn. And, of course, when it was my turn to talk, he he pulled the sunglasses off and looked at me, and he was sweating. And he was a sweaty, crazy man with his gut hanging out, and I was like, wow, I just lost it.
Well, Jimmy Fallon, we are so glad to have you with us, but we have invited you here today to play a game we're calling...
The first 20 audience members into the auditorium tonight were given genuine Carl Castle sports coat elbow patches.
Last weekend, as I'm sure you know, the 30th anniversary of the infamous Disco Demolition Night at Chicago's Comiskey Park. That became a riot, caused the forfeiting of a game. It's remembered as one of the dumbest ballgame promotions in history. In honor of that bit of local lore, we're going to ask you three questions about other baseball promotions. Answer two questions right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Jimmy Fallon playing for?
Jimmy is playing for Danielle Rouse Hollifield of Jacksonville, Florida.
All right, ready
to play? That was my first girlfriend.
Really?
Yeah, it's a weird coincidence.
Now it's, you can make it up to her, man. Here
oh
we go.
Oh, my God. Very nice.
First question, one of the worst baseball promotions ever, maybe the worst, was at a game on June 4th, 1974, in Cleveland, the Indians versus the Rangers. What was the promotion? A, Chinese throwing star night. B, unlimited 10-cent beer night. Or C, cage match fight night.
I would have, first of all, I would have loved this night, and I would have shown up. I'm going to guess 10-cent unlimited beer
night. Yes, 10-cent beer night is gone down in history.
That is a nightmare.
The game had to be forfeited.
Honestly, who could have predicted that 10-cent beer night would go wrong?
Yeah, drunken fans.
I mean, that is a mistake.
Yes. The umpire finally called the game after a hunting knife landed near his foot. Out of here.
You have the seventh inning stretch, the eighth inning fight.
And the ninth inning projectile vomit. Really
exactly.
All right. Another promotion that went awry happened, as is often the case, at a minor league park when the West Michigan Whitecaps decided to do what at one of their games in 2006? A, release 20 dogs and 20 cats into the stands just to see what happens. B, drop $1,000 bills from a helicopter. Or C, fire popcorn at the fans with an air cannon.
I'm going to say they dropped $1,000.
You're right, Jimmy. They did. They dropped $1,000 into the stands in the ensuing melee. As adults grappled with children for the money, two people
what
were hospitalized.
What year was that?
This was just a few years ago, 2006, they did this.
What's wrong with people?
I don't know. Last question. This is a promotion that happened last year. It was linked to a current event. Happened June 13th, 2008. It was for the Macon Music team. Was it A, Hillary Clinton pantsuit day, B, Elliot Spitzer night, or C, Larry Craig wide stance day?
I'm going to say it's... wow. I'm going to say it's Hillary Clinton pantsuit.
Hillary Clinton pantsuit day, where anybody wearing a pantsuit gets in free. No, it was actually Elliot Spitzer night at the ballpark in honor of Elliot Spitzer, who at that time was caught in his prostitution scandal.
Oh, my God.
Because of Client 9, the ninth fan into the ballpark got prizes, and everyone who had ever resigned a position in shame got a discount. Carl, how did Jimmy Fallon do in our quiz?
Well, Jimmy, you weren't perfect, but you had two correct answers, and that's good enough to win for Danielle Rouse Hollifield.
I love you, Danielle!
Yo! Jimmy Fallon is the host of NBC's Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you guys so much. I had a blast.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In just a minute, I turn to Carl. I ask, brother, can you spare a rhyme? And he'll say yes, because it's time for the Listener Limerick Challenge.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Carl. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to play, give us a call. 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel. Some more questions for you from the week's news. Roy, a new study tried to monitor the amount of physical activity children were getting by giving them personal pedometers. Surprisingly, they found obese children recorded the most exercise. But then researchers discovered the reason for this shocking finding, though. What was it?
Because it took so many calories for them to stand up.
No.
It wasn't that they burned more calories, it was that they actually were more active?
No.
No. Oh, I thought that's what you
said.
Well,
it explains why the pedometers registered lots of trips to get sticks and bring them back.
Ah, I see. They had gone outside to get sticks. Sticks? They had...
Should we give them a hint?
You can answer the question if you want to.
They put them on their dogs.
They put them on their dogs. Oh. They put the pedometers on the dogs.
Fat kid, all kids all did that?
It was they were pretty smart.
Oh.
They're chubby but crafty.
Oh.
The study, done by a sports medicine center in London, found the children to be, quote, extremely active, but researchers began to suspect something when many of the obese kids reported their favorite exercises as chasing squirrels,
mm-hmm.
peeing on things, and unwelcome humping.
Well,
can we say that on radio?
We just did.
Okay.
I've known fat kids who were very much like that.
Charlie, concerned about the threats that our nation faces at this difficult time, a group of Republicans in the Senate have introduced a bill to ban what?
This is my favorite senator, Senator Sam Brownback, who introduced a bill with a number of co-sponsors to ban human-animal hybrids.
In fact, yes.
This is called locking the barn after the centaur has been stolen.
Yes. I was about to say... It's not been a good week for the Republicans in terms of the Latino vote. They're also kissing the mermaid vote goodbye this week.
However, Democratic Congressman Dr. Moreau
yes.
was in opposition.
Human-animal hybrids will be banned overseas. You see scientists refusing human DNA with that of cows and other animals to forward medical research, and because it's totally awesome. Imagine if they could combine you with a pig. You'd have bacon 24/7. But Sam Brownback of Kansas, as you said, he introduced the legislation. He says creating human-animal hybrids is a violation of human dignity and challenges the definition of what it means to be human. So under the proposed law, mermaids, mermen, centaurs would be banned, or at least they'd have to use separate entrances at restaurants. On the other side, Democrats said this is ridiculous, it solves a problem that doesn't exist, and everybody should just calm down. And then Henry Waxman quietly gave himself a cat bath.
I'll bet when animals heard about this bill, they all were in favor of it.
They don't want to. They don't want to.
No.
They don't want anything to do with us.
Right.
I don't blame them.
They don't want any human dignity at all, based on what they've seen on television.
Roy, this week, Janet Napolitano, the head of the Department of Homeland Security, announced the creation of a task force that will consider changes to what?
To the. The orange and red, the alert.
Exactly right, the color-coded terror alert system. After 7 years of warning, terrifying, and baffling Americans with its orange and yellow alerts, a bipartisan panel is going to review the system. The alert level has never gone below yellow or elevated alert, although, and this is true, Hawaii once independently lowered its alert level to blue for an entire year before going back up to yellow because they ran out of Mai Tais, I guess. For 60 days, members of the public are free to send their suggestions for a new system to the panel. We suggest, of course, the public radio host terror alert level. You can go from Garrison Keillor calm to Ira Glass detached ironic concern to, in the case of dire emergency, car talk hysterical laughter.
Ha 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 ha, we're all gonna die.
So where would you fit in? Where would you fit in?
I think if you said, you know, at the Peter Sagal level, people would be going, who? Charlie, the New York Times reports that as Japan faces its worst recession in a generation, many companies in the country have been forced to lay off their most efficient workers. So who's getting fired?
Cats.
No.
Dogs.
No.
Robots.
Yes, robots. Oh. Very good. Japan has the most working robots of any country, but as industrial production has plummeted there as other places, so has the need for mechanized labor. All over Japan, unemployed hobobots are living in impromptu tent camps known as circuit cities. Some say the robots are enjoying the break. They're not powering on till noon. Using their daytime television sensors. Many robots are looking for work, though. It's tough out there. Somewhere in a Tokyo high-rise, even as we speak, a boss is looking across the desk at a robot and saying, I'm sorry, you aren't the droid we're looking for. Mm.
They keep kind of bumping against the wall, I think.
I think it would be kind of scary to, like, call the robot into your office and tell him he's being laid off.
Yes.
You know? I don't understand. I don't understand, Dave.
Coming up is Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago, or you can buy tickets for upcoming shows in Santa Barbara, Boston, and Pasadena, California. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jeff Hobson from Berkeley, California.
Hey, Jeff, how are you?
I'm great.
How are things in the beautiful town of Berkeley?
They are terrific. We've got a beautiful sunny day out here and having a great time.
That's good. What do you do there?
I work for Transform, a nonprofit organization that works to make it easier for people to get around on public transit, on foot, and by bike.
That's disappointing. I thought he turned into a car.
That'd be totally cool.
That would be.
Welcome to the show, Jeff. Now, Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to go?
Absolutely.
Here is your first limerick.
As a cat, I'm reluctant to stir, but I'm hungry, so I must rouse her. I could scratch and meow, but I want my food now. She moves faster when I merely
purr.
You're right. Your cat is not purring because he's happy. He just wants something. And helplessly, you are going to get it for him. Researchers at the University of Sussex found cats purr to manipulate humans. Turns out felines have a so-called soliciting purr, voiced at a frequency similar to a human baby's, and it immediately turns any human with an earshot into a helpless food-fetching robot. The study's lead author is a cat owner herself. She says her next study will just involve offering cans of tuna to her own pet, although she's not sure why. Here is your next limerick.
A stubbed toe is a pain beyond bearing, but my wife shrugs it off. She's uncaring. But my pain will be heard in some four-letter words. Yes, I'll find some relief in harsh
swearing.
Right. Science has proved it. Letting loose with a string of colorful swear words really does make your thumb feel better when you whack it with a hammer. There you go. Volunteers at Britain's Keene University were asked to submerge their hands in a bucket of ice water and keep it there as long as they could. One group was encouraged to swear a blue streak during the exercise. The other was asked to repeat non-expletives like, "Sugar!" The volunteers who cussed were able to tolerate the pain longer, and they reported less pain. Just like parents, though, researchers warned that swearing too often may make the cuss words less effective, citing an incident recently in which Rahm Emanuel wept like a baby at a paper cut. "Sugar," he said. Here is your final limerick.
Our spy operation went goth with this cyborg bug of a dark cloth. Its probing night flight seeks out the bright light. We spy with the help of a
moth.
Right, moth. Very good. Better hide the top secret documents next time you open your closet, because government scientists are creating cyborg spy moths.
Oh, good.
The initial plan involved gluing machinery to the backs of moths, but it had a tendency to fall off, so scientists at DARPA are now embedding machinery directly into the growing caterpillar's brain so it emerges from the cocoon as a full-fledged government spy, ready to be equipped with tiny cameras and listening devices, and when necessary, to seduce.
Do they drink martinis?
Of course, tiny ones.
I want to know how they're going to make the little Baccarat shoe that they can go play cards at the casino.
Oh, that's very cool.
What good is having a spy that on his first mission gets up and flies into a light bulb? What happened to the secret team? Well, it's in the grill of that Chevy that just went down.
Carl, how did Jeff do?
Very well, Peter. Three correct answers, so Jeff wins our prize.
Well done. Thank you so much for playing, Jeff.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Peter, we have a rarity. We have a three-way tie for first place.
Oh, my goodness.
Each of our panelists, Roy, Roxanne, and Charlie, each has 3 points.
I'll be doing.
Okay. Thank you, sir. We have randomly selected who's going to go first. Roy, you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. As part of its 100th anniversary celebration, Thursday, blank addressed the NAACP.
Obama.
Right. President 3 weeks Obama. After admitting to extramarital affairs, blank canceled state meetings to spend time with his wife.
Governor Sanford.
Right. After paying back the bailout money, blank posted $3.44 billion in quarterly profit.
Morgan Sachs. Goldman Sachs.
Goldman Sachs, right. As of Thursday, the Sears Tower in Chicago was officially renamed the blank.
Big Willie.
Right. The Willis Tower. A Staten Island teen walking down the street text messaging got a nasty surprise when she blanked.
She was eaten by... I don't know, some
she fell down a manhole. On Thursday, NASA released newly restored video of U.S. astronauts taking their first steps on blank.
The moon.
Right. A Pennsylvania daycare is filing a federal civil rights lawsuit after its children were denied access to a private blank.
Private radio.
Private pool. In an effort to curb the country's high birth rate, India is introducing rural villages to blank as a form of birth control.
Television.
Yes. Late night TV. Very good. Very good. As India's health and family welfare minister says, quote, when there is no electricity, there is nothing else to do but produce babies. But, quote, if there is electricity in every village, then people will watch TV till late at night and then fall asleep. They won't get a chance to produce children. Either that or the sight of Jimmy Kimmel can really spoil the mood. Carl, how did Roy do on our quiz?
Roy had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points, and Roy has taken the lead.
All right. Charlie, you're up next. Fill in the blank. Investigators at Southwest Airlines are trying to determine what caused a blank to appear in one of their planes.
A hole.
A hole indeed. Mm. President Obama's speech in the economic stimulus plan was interrupted Monday when one of his blanks crashed to the floor.
The teleprompter thingy.
Right. On Monday, disgraced financier blank began his 150-year sentence at a prison in North Carolina.
Bernie Madoff.
Right. Visa announced that a programming error was what had caused several cardholders to be charged blank for minor purchases.
Millions of dollars.
Well, actually, $23 quadrillion plus a $15 overdraft fee. After 5 delays, NASA was finally able to launch the blank on Wednesday.
The Space Shuttle Endeavor.
With 22 nominations, the show 30 Rock leads the pack for this year's blank award.
Emmy Awards.
Right. One person was injured at a wedding in Italy when the bride's bouquet blanked.
Exploded.
No, brought down a plane.
It's one of those F-22s. Right.
Yes. It was going to be awesome. A small plane was going to fly past the Italian wedding and toss the bride's bouquet to a row of bridesmaids and female guests below. But when the bouquet was tossed, it was immediately sucked into the small plane's engine, causing it to catch fire and explode. And then crash into a nearby hostel in a rather non-festive way. A bridal expert said that the bouquet is traditionally thrown for luck, but nobody ever asked in this case what kind of luck. Carl, how did Charlie do in our quiz?
Well, Charlie had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points and is tied with Roy for the lead.
Oh, my goodness. How many, then, does Roxanne need to break this thing open?
Well, she needs 6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right, Roxanne, you feeling up to it?
I'll give it a shot.
Here we go. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. Alabama physician Regina Benjamin was announced as President Obama's pick for blank.
Surgeon General.
Right. Officials said that a mechanical problem is the likely cause of the passenger plane crash in blank on Wednesday.
Iran.
Right. News reports from South Korea announced that blank has been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
Kim Jong-il.
Right. The mayor of Los Angeles announced the city will pay the $1.4 million bill for blank.
Michael Jackson's funeral.
Right. A man in Maine who woke up to find an intruder in his house was able to blank.
Is this the one that gave him the fake beer?
Yeah, lured him out with beer. Very good. World health officials are worried that fears of a pandemic will make demand for a blank vaccine outstrip supply.
Swine flu.
Right. The first ever airline just for blanks began operation this week.
Pets.
Right. A first in China this week when police fined a truck driver for blanking while driving.
Eating noodles.
No, taking a shower. A patrol car spotted water leaking from the cab of the truck and pulled the driver over, thinking there was a mechanical problem. Instead, he found the soggy driver sitting under a sprinkler system he had rigged above his head. His wife was in the passenger seat holding a sheet of plastic up to protect the car instruments from getting damaged. The explanation? The air conditioning in the truck had broken down, and, well, they had to keep cool somehow.
Right.
Carl, did Roxanne do well enough to win?
She needed 7 to win outright, and she had 7.
Oh, my God.
So with 17 points, Roxanne Roberts is this week's champion.
Well done. Well done. Since Judge Sonia Sotomayor was so guarded in the witness stand this week, we're going to ask our panelists in just a minute to predict what she will reveal about herself the moment she is confirmed. And if you want to send us your prediction, do so at twitter.com/waitwait. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators Hardwood Flooring direct from the mill. Information at 1-800-HARDWOOD or lumberliquidators.com. The National Association of Realtors, whose members recognize that every market is different. A realtor is a member of the National Association of Realtors. And CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 750,000 tons of freight daily. CSX out tomorrow moves. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Bethany Williams. Our web guru, Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Waltrover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will Sonia Sotomayor finally reveal? Charlie Pierce.
That she was wrong and baseball has to go back on strike.
Roxanne Roberts.
Ay, caramba, it's true. Sotomayor will reveal she is the secret love child of Ricky Ricardo and Ethel Mertz.
Oh, my God. Roy Blunt Jr.
She will reveal that she actually had a wonderful time with all of you senators, and I know lots of you are lawyers, and perhaps someday you'll come before the Supreme Court. And I hope you try some of that crap.
Well, panel, if Judge Sotomayor reveals any of those things, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also, Charlie Pierce, Roxanne Roberts, Roy Blunt Jr. You're fabulous. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.